Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. There are, of course, many facets to the war for the free world, both in terms of the eras in which it has been fought and the techniques that it has entailed and the various adversaries that we have found ourselves confronting, not because we wanted to, but because, as Ronald Reagan famously said, every generation faces an existential threat to freedom because, my words, not his, someone wishes to take freedom away from us. A woman who has been giving close study to the war for the free world and has begun playing, I believe, an extraordinarily important part in one of its most interesting theaters, that would be the left coast of the United States, is Dr. Karen Sigmund. She is the president of a terrific organization based in Los Angeles, the American Freedom Alliance. And we're going to spend a full hour with her talking about some of the insights that she has obtained through her years of evaluating the enemies, foreign and domestic, facing our country, and her efforts, most notably and most recently through the American Freedom Alliance, or AFA, to counter those adversaries, almost always in partnership with other like-minded patriots. And I am an unalloyed admirer of the AFA and very appreciative of the chance to visit with Karen about, well, its most important insights and hers to date and what we need to do to act upon them. Dr. Karen Sigmund, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. I'm glad to have you.
Well, thank you so much. It's an honor to be here, and it really is. And yeah, it's been terrific having you as part of the work that we do with the American Freedom Alliance. It's been a real pleasure.
It's been my honor. So there are many things that I would like to just sort through at the very beginning of this conversation, because they're fascinating aspects of your own life that I think will help our audience calibrate the kind of capabilities that you personally are bringing to bear, and for which I'm very pleased to say you're going to be honored on the 18th of August in Los Angeles. We'll be talking more about that in a moment. But let's talk a little bit about some of your personal history here, Karen. Your father, as I understand it, grew up in Adolf Hitler's Berlin. And I gather that resulted in you being inculcated from early on in your life with the insights that unfortunately too few of us born in this country understand and for that matter practice, namely that freedom is a very precarious thing, that as Ronald Reagan went on to say in that quote that I mentioned, it has to be fought for, it has to be protected, it has to be passed on to the next generation to do the same. So tell us about sort of the generational experience that you had with a father who grew up under the jackboot of tyranny in the Third Reich.
Right. Right. It really does sensitize one. And growing up in the United States without a background like mine, we are so privileged. I mean, talk about privilege, right? White privilege is ridiculous, but we are so privileged. Those of us who did grow up or who live in this country now, that it's not really something that we've ever felt we've had to think about. But talking to my dad growing up, and really he didn't talk about it a lot when we were kids, but it came out a lot later, what it's like to grow up not only under a regime such as Adolf Hitler, but in the early days when it's starting to realize that tyranny doesn't just, you know, you don't wake up one morning and say, oh my gosh, we've lost everything. That's not how it is. It comes in baby steps. It comes in wrapped in, you all are going to love this. It comes wrapped in faux compassion, and this is all going to be wonderful, and everything is going to be better under my rule, not just policies, but rule. And people get caught up in the promises made that government's going to do something for you, and if they get caught up in that. They get caught up in finding a group, one particular group, maybe more than one, but at least one, that's demonized, that's blamed for every evil. When the press is starting to be limited because, you know, it's helpful to us all. When schools become indoctrination centers, this is how it works. It's slow.
These are the building blocks for totalitarianism. And as you say, they're insinuated incrementally and often in ways that don't cause alarm initially. And, you know, Karen, I've said on the show before, I think, but I have really been imprinted by it. I remember as a kid myself growing up here in the United States, as I learned about Hitler's rise and what it entailed, and I kept thinking to myself, what were the people of that time thinking when these trajectories or trends, if you will, were so unmistakably building towards the catastrophe that ultimately, you know, not only befell the German people, but the people of the entire European continent and, for that matter, much of the rest of the world. And I've come to the conclusion that they were thinking pretty much what we're thinking right now. And as you say, some of the building blocks maybe are more subtle at the moment, but talk a little bit about socialism as a phenomenon. We have been inculcated with the idea that Hitler didn't have anything to do with socialism. He was a fascist. He was a man of the right as opposed to the left. And yet, as you know so well, Karen, you've been a teacher for many years professionally. We'll talk about that a bit more too. But remind us about what Nazism stood for.
Right. Well, let's not forget that Nazi is short for National Socialism. The left tends to emphasize the nationalist part, but it's the socialism part that was really the threat, the danger, the underlying evil, that it was good for a particular country or whatever was really secondary to the fact that what he wanted was socialism.
And hold the thought. Got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about that with Dr. Karen Sigerman, the president of the terrific American Freedom Alliance, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We're visiting for this full hour with Dr. Karen Sigerman, an extraordinarily thoughtful, insightful, articulate practitioner of, well, public policy in her post as the president of the American Freedom Alliance, organization that is devoted, as its name suggests, to preserving American freedom in alliance with many others. And as I mentioned earlier, we at the Center for Security Policy have been privileged to be among those with whom she has particularly made common cause over the years. Now, Karen, coming back to your father and his time in Nazi Germany and watching this, well, I think of it as kind of a boa constrictor, inexorably strangling what was the, you know, poor resemblance of a free society in post-World War II Germany, the Weimar Republic. But give us a flavor of how these incremental steps really were socialist more than fascistic or something that is now imputed to it of the right.
Right. Well, there's certainly, this is one of the biggest lies that Nazism was a right-wing policy or political movement. On the contrary, right-wing has associated with it freedom, liberty. Everything to do with Nazism was the opposite of that. It was socialist. It was a matter of the government taking over all major institutions. Education, of course, they had a stranglehold, as you pointed out, boa constrictor, and that's very true. They had a stranglehold on education, they had an absolute stranglehold on the media, stranglehold on businesses, stranglehold on what one could and couldn't say, right? Let's not forget, kids were asked, told, urged to report on anything counter to the Nazi narrative that their parents might have said. People were reported for things all the time. People were rounded up, were made to disappear. And all of this is even separate from the issue of dealing with the Jews, and as if one could separate that from Nazism. The whole approach towards the Jews and other groups, but obviously predominantly the Jews, demonizing one element of the population is another big element that totalitarian governments do. You find a group, you target it, you destroy it. Even this is what you do. So that
it's all about consolidating power and having somebody who is a threat in can justify, you know, everybody pulling in behind the leader to deal with that that threat within. So Karen, when you describe these building blocks, I'm so struck by the fact that when we have the advantage of hindsight, at least, it's clear how they're being put into place inexorably to consolidate power, as I say. And yet we have this same sort of mindset at the moment as I gather was operating then. We tell ourselves when we see a similar kind of stranglehold being proposed. Fortunately, I think Donald Trump is standing athwart it at the moment, but he's under unbelievably intense assault for doing it. But we're being told that it's a stranglehold on business or on what can be said. You know, this is not our big problem, that there's really nothing to see here, folks. Move along. That it's really not our problem. It's somebody else's problem over there. And if we just ignore, for example, what's happening to Europe, in which all of these syndromes are even more manifest. So talk to us about that and this sort of cognitive dissonance as an essential element of the success of these totalitarians.
Right. It's so terrifying. The more sensitized you are to this or aware of it, even I had the great good fortune with my father, but even if you're a student of actual history, not propagandistic history, but actual history, you can't help but see how the patterns are absolutely reasserting themselves here. And by that, I mean, of course, what the left is doing, and to such a degree that AFA, we held a conference last May, just a few months ago, May 5th, on the left's long march through the institutions. This is something that they planned, you know, many decades ago. it's a strategy that the left has used, not just to bring down, or not necessarily to bring down, a country or a civilization through its economic policies, but through its cultural policies. And this is what Hitler did. He didn't try to bring Germany down, obviously, but he knew that in order to attain total control, he went through the institutions. And that's exactly what the left is doing now, through our education institutions, our religious institutions, our science, our family institutions, the culture as a whole, every civic institution that we have, including our very language. And this is one of the, you were talking before about baby steps and building blocks. It's not just civic building blocks in terms of major cultural institutions, but also literally the words that we're allowed to use. And then the strategies that they use to silence us. We're being deplatformed, debanked, demonetized, hate speech is criminalized. We're seeing that in Europe more than we see it here at this point, but it's coming. And these are all tactics classically used by the left, which is utterly counter to any freedom-loving people, you and me, and historically what America has stood for.
Indeed. Karen Sigmund, as you are working through this, and let me just introduce your impressive academic credentials in addition to the undergraduate work that you've done and some of the extraordinary, I mean, really Renaissance kind of, breadth of activity, among other things, helping develop new sonar systems in underwater acoustics and actually testing them in sea trials. I mean, that's just an amazing accomplishment. But you've got a PhD, a master's in international relations, a PhD in education and American culture. You've taught at every level now for quite some time. So you've seen particularly what's been happening on our campuses, but more broadly, what has been the impact in the society at large? And I wanted to introduce another very important focus of the work of AFA. You've talked a bit about the long march to the institutions of the left, but tell us a little bit about the anomaly, I think is the only way to describe it, of the left making common cause with the Sharia supremacists. It's the term I prefer, but there are other names for it. But they would seem not to have much in common, given the very different kind of end states that the left has. On the one hand, a secular and, you know, triumph of the proletariat and atheism and so on, and very much, a hostile attitude towards all of that on the part of the Islamists. What's the fundamental nexus between the what some have called the red and green elements of the red-green axis?
Right. From what I can surmise, because you're on this, as you say, on the surface of it, no two groups could be more inimical, if that's the right word, to each other, antithetical to each other. One wants secular and the other wants Islam. What they both want, though, as means to the end, is the destruction of Western civilization. It's the undermining, as we've spoke about before, of all these building blocks. It's the undermining of civilization. It's the bringing complete chaos to everything, from our children's minds to, again, all civic institutions. All that destruction serves both of those groups perfectly well. Sharia thrives where there is chaos, and the left comes in as the knight in shining armor where there is chaos.
the chaos that is now being facilitated sort of in concert with one another is what's particularly worrying. I'm thinking especially, I think you've been vilified by the Southern Poverty Law Center, as have I, Karen Sigmund, and they are, of course, a radical leftist political warfare machine, and yet they have been enormously helpful to the Islamists, if you wish to use that term, in branding people like us, you know, Islamophobes, as well as haters and racists and all the other nonsense that the left spews. Don't they appreciate that, you know, virtually every pillar of the left, whether it's feminists or women more generally, or homosexuals, or, you know, secularists, are in the crosshairs of the Islamists? I mean, it doesn't make sense, except, I guess, Karen, that they share this desire for the chaos that will bring about the end of their common enemy, namely us. We're going to come back to how you see it and what the implications of it are straight ahead. Welcome back. We're visiting with Dr. Karen Sigmund, the president of the American Freedom Alliance. As I say, a remarkable woman who has earned her PhD and has taught much of what she's learned at the grade school level, the high school level, and the university level. She has been most effective, I think, in thinking through and addressing some of the sort of intellectual and informational and political elements of the war for the free world. But in the darkest days of the Cold War, she was also bringing her skills to bear, amazingly, in developing underwater acoustics technology, sonar systems and the like, to help our military deal with the Soviet undersea threat and much more. So, woman of great accomplishment and perspicacity. And Karen, I'm sorry I had to cut you off, but you were just beginning to talk about how the red-green axis is operating in concert, despite their presumed very different end states they have in mind.
Right. Well, if you think about it, and thank you for your kind words about all my work and everything. If you think about it, both the Islamists and the left, think back to candidate Barack Obama when he was running for to be president. Hope and change were his words. Not hope about anything specific, not change to anything specific. It was an empty vessel that was optimistic and bright, and into that empty vessel, each one of us could put whatever it is we wanted to be hopeful about and whatever we envisioned that change to be. I think this red-green axis, the left, the Islamists, in the rhetoric in both cases is some kind of is utopian. And the destruction is pointing out what's bad about this, that, or the other thing. And don't you want to make things better? The left, don't you want to make things make things better, make it fairer, make it more equal, make, you know, this better, and we'll all be thriving. And so tearing down anything that might be bad and holding up sort of emptily ideologically positive some beautiful vision for the future. And I think from the Islamic point of view, the destruction part, they're all for as well. And while they have a more, a clearer vision of what they want, both the left and the Islamists don't feel they have to sell that part as much as they have to sell the ideas of fairness of just everyone's going to be happier in the future. And the only thing that's in the way of all that utopian wonder is capitalism, is corporations, is on and on. And so both benefit by the destruction of these things, and neither really feels they have to provide that vision of the future. And so,
at least for the moment, get the buy-in. So,
exactly,
Karen,
right.
You have had a taste of this personally, and I want you to tell us about your own hard experience at the hands of these folks who have been marching through the institutions. When you did as you mentioned earlier, a program sponsored by the American Freedom Alliance in May of this year, May 5th, I believe it was. What happened the next day?
Yeah, it's really shocking. May 5th was the conference on the Long March, as I said, telling people, informing people, not me, but we had 20 plus speakers, experts in all these areas, warning about what happens when the left does take this long view and step by step does take over our institutions. And literally the next day, May 6th, I was informed by the school where I've taught the last 4 years that they were not renewing my contract. So on Sunday, I'm informing about the left's long march, and literally the next day, literally, I'm a casualty of that very same long march.
Now, this is the Lycée Français of
right.
Los Angeles, where you yourself attended, as I understand it.
I went there as a kid.
You were teaching, among other things, most recently mathematics. This is a vindictive retaliation, it seems fairly clear, because of what you were doing in your other job with the American Freedom Alliance to expose something. Was it obvious to you before this draconian punishment was meted out that you were not well thought of by the school, that it was part of the long march, as it were, through the
right.
institutions?
Well, I think a lot of us who work in the not conservative world are always aware of how vulnerable we are if people find out how we really feel. And so I've always been aware that something could happen. I really did not think something would. I just didn't. For whatever reason, I'm a great teacher. My students love me. I bring a lot to the classroom. You know, I've experienced, like you had mentioned, doing underwater acoustics. I was one of the early women in that area. A lot of that, the fact that the school is where I had gone as a child, that I knew the family who ran it and so on, I thought, you know, would maybe keep me protected, right? But, you know, it's hard to know if it was vindictive or if it's really just a reaction by a school as part of the long march that they're not even aware of. You know, did she say, oh my goodness, you know, this woman is a, you know, part of this movement or whatever? I don't know. I just think anything that's not on the left fills them with fear.
Yeah. Well, but more to the point, it's absolutely sort of Pavlovian that when someone exposes what's on with the left or with their red-green sort of partners, the default setting is to shut that person or that voice or that outlet down, is it not? And this takes you back to something that you talked about in the context of the totalitarian experience of the Third Reich, silencing you, making certain words or the utterance of them a criminal offense. This is hard to believe it could be happening here. But again, Karen, one of the things that I think AFA has done a great job of doing is trying to help us understand that some of those baby steps or some of those building blocks, if you will, are becoming more visible in this country, but they're still much less so than what is happening in Europe. Tell us a bit more about how that trajectory, if you will, specifically at the hands of the left, but also of the Islamists in Europe, is what they have in mind for us as well in due course.
Well, no question. And it is baby steps. And if the beauty of that is that if you fight them at each baby step, you may stem the tide. And a couple of things that we're seeing now here, Catherine Engelbrecht, who we honored actually last year at our dinner, True the Vote, who had four government agencies against her, just won her lawsuit. Whenever we fight back, we win. And so if there are enough people aware who will fight back in this country, we have a greater likelihood of winning and of stopping it. The problem is that we don't always stand up to it. In Europe, you know her, and I've become very close to her, Elizabeth Savitch Wolf, whose hate speech conviction in Austria was just upheld in the European courts. Their constitution, insofar as they have one, is nothing like ours, but we do need to pay very close attention to what goes on in Europe. She had said she had spoken the truth about Mohammed and was convicted of inciting hate. So what we're
this
seeing
is specifically
in Europe,
with reference to his marriage to a 6-year-old, which was consummated at
not consummated
age 9
until she was 9.
Yeah.
But still, it's, you know,
it's a fact. But Karen, let me just ask you this. It may be a quibble. It may be something that we ought to refine. You said that whenever we stand up and fight, we win. I wish that were true. I think that it's a bit uneven, and you know, the case of Elizabeth Sabatish Wolf is unfortunately one of the things I'm thinking of. But what thing is true? And we have to pause for just another moment. We'll be back with more of Karen Sigerman. One thing is true, folks. If we don't fight, we never win. Karen Sigerman will bear a witness to that and give us some guidance as to what we must do now to fight successfully right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. Karen, you were just about to get into this question of the degree to which the failure to understand what's happening in Europe is coming here, and that indeed there's a lot of evidence that what is already manifest in Europe is beginning to become manifest here too. The globalist agenda of the left, the consolidation of power in the government's hands, the reduction of freedom, all hallmarks of the red, and increasingly the submission that is the express objective of the Sharia supremacists to their demands as well. All of it feeding chaos, all of it weakening our republic. As you look at this picture, it is ominous to say the least. You have personally suffered, as we were discussing a moment ago, at the hands of the red-green axis. I'm thrilled that one small recognition of what you've gone through is in the offing. Tell us just briefly about this awards dinner that the American Freedom Alliance is having, in which you will be featured as a hero of conscience on the 18th of August.
Right. Thank you. Yeah, it is kind of an astounding thing. AFA every year chooses one or two individuals or groups who they feel, who we feel, has stood for freedom, for our values, and have in some way paid a price. And this year, that person is me, which is, I never in a million years would have thought that I'd find myself here, but I am thrilled to be honored by the organization. We're also honoring Bill Becker, who's president of Freedom X, a law firm specializing in freedom of religion, freedom of expression. We have Katie Hopkins, who I simply adore, as our keynote. And it was so stupendous. And Bill Whittle is our master of ceremonies.
These events, the people that you've just named, make them life-changing for those of us honored enough to be participating in it. And I will be participating in this one if you'll have me. But Karen, this, just to be clear, you're the president of the organization. I assume you had nothing to do with your selection, but it is a great testimony to the high regard on which your colleagues hold you at the American Freedom Alliance, as do I know so many in Los Angeles, and your reach actually does extend around the world. So just let's use the remaining time to talk a bit about what the sorts of things that the American Freedom Alliance has, and you personally have advanced as the sorts of things that we must do to address these threats to our freedoms, these existential threats.
First, let me say that one of the reasons that I'm okay with being honored is that it's not just me. Since this happened to me, I've discovered we all know people who have suffered equally by the left shutting us down, shutting us out, shutting us up. And so choosing me, it's not about me. I'm representing people all across the country, around the world, who are being silenced simply for what we believe, simply for having a narrative that's different from what the left does.
But your story is so important because it isn't someplace else. It's here. It is happening in America, and you're not alone in that regard. In your case, you've lost your livelihood. That's a very punishing thing indeed. But you were about to make a point about other things that we can do and must to save our country in this circumstance.
Right. As I had said before, the left attacks us in every civic institution, how we speak, but obviously every political one. We have to fight back wherever we can. To the left, there's no such thing as a political arena separate from the cultural arena. They fight in every possible way. Fight back against that. Fight back against what's going on in the schools. Become part of school boards. I think if we have freedom at the forefront of all our decision making, we can't help but do the right thing. The right, we on the right, conservatives, see freedom as paramount. The left sees freedom as something that must be destroyed. If we always take the action towards freedom, and that means supporting conservative policies, it means supporting choice where, you know, school choice, for example, it means standing up at every turn. And if we ourselves as individuals don't have the courage or the, I don't know, just the character, that kind of character that does that, find organizations that do and support them. Because most of us aren't made to be warriors, and that's fine. But where there are warriors, we need to support them. And where there are candidates running, support them.
Let's just tease that out, because Karen, I think what you said is so vital. Not everyone is called to leadership, but we must support those who are. And a friend of mine pointed out the other day that in the revolution that gave birth to this country, it was something like 3% of the population was actually involved in bringing the revolutionary fight to the British. About 10% of them supported those who were in the front lines of the fight. About 50% were working for the Tories, for the Brits, and the remainder were sort of on the sidelines. And so a small number of people can make a huge impact, and you certainly are evidence of that at the American Freedom Alliance, Karen. But it falls to some significant subset of our population, I hope, to support the work that that you're doing there, and tell people how they can most easily provide that support. And I would hope not just to the organization itself, but specifically to enable you to continue doing what you do so well there in leading the AFA.
Well, thank you so much. Each one of us does have a role to play in the fight for freedom, some more obviously and more warrior-like, others behind the scenes in, you know, volunteering or donating, just supporting generally. People can help support the American Freedom Alliance and me. There are donate and join buttons on our website, AmericanFreedomAlliance.org. Because, you know, when I would tell people, oh, AFA, we support Western civilization, we protect it, and it used to sound sort of hysterical to me how hyperbolic do those words seem, but it's really not. And my losing my job, my literal losing my livelihood, because literally because of my defense of Western civilization, shows you how under attack it is and how crucial organizations like mine and like yours are to preserving this. You know, again, back to Hitler's Germany, baby steps. And if you wait and wait and wait and don't think it's important enough yet, not important enough yet, not, at some point, it becomes impossible. So my goal is to fight while we still can and thwart them while we still can. Because they, every day, are undermining our freedoms one way or another, changing the narrative, deplatforming, silencing, and so on. We've
right.
got to stand up.
We do. Karen Sigerman, inspiring words for all of us to live by and, I hope, practice. Thank you again for this incredible work that you do at the American Freedom Alliance. Folks, please check out that organization at AmericanFreedomAlliance.org. Karen, God bless you. We'll talk with you again soon. I hope we'll talk with the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.